Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
So I love huddle, marry, break up with, or however you want to call it. And it was brought to my attention. I'm not going to say who because I'm not a snitch, but I won't do that. It was brought to my attention. You guys are doing it wrong. Rick, I was told we're not supposed to be asked individual. You're supposed to ask us in groups of three.
I know how the game works. Yeah, I understand. I'm the one who initially, started playing the game with the three different options. But now all of a sudden you're talking about in order to have this as a longer segment, I have to come up with, 12 different scenarios or whatever it is. This just gives us a way to just bang through it quickly as opposed to, me giving you three every single time we try to do it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you're going to give us one at a time, and we will pick and choose from the three.
Well, unless you want to go back to,
I'm fine with that. The person that told me was just adamant. I was like, well, what's the big deal? Well, that's the way it's supposed to be played. Like a stickler for the rules.
Yeah, I know. It was Ray Santiago. And I'm going back and forth with him asking him about, because I'm diving into the NFC South today. And I tell him what I'm going with. And then the second the last word exits my mouth, he starts asking, he goes, well, did you mention that? I'm like, dude, I just, legitimately 15 seconds ago, I just told, he's like, oh, I wasn't listening. I was like, well, what are we doing now?
I mean, I don't know what to say. I can't defend him.
No, but that's fine. Listen, I get it. And that's fine. He's got all this extra sleep and he's like a watchdog. He's like one of these robotic dogs now that's on patrol to sniff out if things are, aren't being appropriately done. I get it. It's fine.
Okay. All right. We'll bang through that segment in the 12 o'clock hour. 800-919.
You can't say that. You can't say that.
Both of you guys just used that word. We're not supposed to be using that word.
You can't use that word.
Yeah.
I can't use the word bang at all?
No. We said we're not supposed to use it.
Mm-mm.
So Mike Breen has to get rid of it?
I just know that both of you guys used it and we're not supposed to be using it.
Well, you know what I mean? Use it in that context. I didn't realize you can't use the word at all.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
So now it's like one of the eight sinned words in radio that gets added,
which is amazing to me. I mean, I thought that was very appropriate, but
it feels like it's PG-13.
Dude,
I'm
telling
you now.
Have
to think of new ways that Mike Breen can call a big three pointer. Then
time out. I'm glad Chris just said that. You try to watch a movie with your kid, right? And as far as you know, going into the movie, there should be no problems. And then you watch the movie, and for some reason, they feel the need to to say words that you don't want your kid saying for no reason at all.
Right.
Like, I don't understand what we're doing.
But then what makes it even more awkward is that you have to explain the meaning of the word and why it shouldn't be used.
Yeah, or then try to figure, go through your Rolodex in your head of what you've just watched with your kid as to why he's now running around the house saying it. where did he get that word? Because we don't say it. Oh, yeah, it was on that animated movie that's supposed to be for kids, but in actuality, really
it
shouldn't
has adult themed language.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But God forbid, I mean, as a 28-year-old man like myself, I can't say, give me the brain. I can't do it.
No,
makes no sense.
You can't.
But we adapt. So now it's cuddle.
This is what we do. It's cuddle. Yeah. It's marry. And I'm still not all that.
We don't know what it is. Yeah. I don't mind cuddle, marry, kill. Or marry, cuddle, kill, whatever.
Well, we could go. I mean, we could even.
But kill seems so dark.
It does.
Let's not go kill then. All right. That's okay.
I feel like it's an episode of Dexter, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's adjust on the fly. So this is what we'll do for today. Santi, instead of Don's,
dead.
Yeah. Maybe we get rid of that because that leads to the whole kill thing. And we go with Don saying, look at this garbage, maybe.
Yes.
It's a trashy take.
Yes.
Firmly. Look at this garbage. Look at this garbage.
I like it. I might like that drop better.
Marry, cuddle, dump.
I like it a lot.
Marry, cuddle,
like
trash.
We got to get rid of that though. I thought that would sound better. It does not sound good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm just trying to think about it. I don't know if that works.
It's not.
Do you like having your background?
You also,
that's kind of creepy.
Concerning.
Yeah, I don't like
all right, let's
either.
Go to Eli in Newark. Eli, save us. You're on 98.7.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're okay, Eli. How you doing, buddy?
All right. I want to wish all you guys the best, first of all. Your family, friends, and loved ones, and I thank you guys for doing what you're doing. It's needed for such a time as this, believe me.
We're here for you, Eli. We're here.
First of all, I'm a New York Football Giants fan. I want to thank Chris Candy helping us win that Super Bowl, bro. I really mean that, too.
My man. Appreciate it.
I heard somebody say something about pressure on Daniel Jones. I want to talk about this one minute. I don't see it that way because right now we have, let me see, Jason Garrett, the offensive coordinator, who that's what he's always been to me. He should have never been a head coach, but he'll be a better offensive coordinator. Okay. Then I heard that Tony Romo was going to help Daniel Jones understand Jason Garrett's system. Okay. But even more important, or maybe equally important, we have the ex-offensive line coach. I think his name is Colombo, not Peter Falk, Colombo. He's going to be a real super intense guy. So that can't do nothing but help Daniel Jones and me. I don't know about this pressure business. Anyway, you guys keep up the job you guys do. It's needed, okay?
Thanks, Eli. You're nice. It's a nice call. Forget about Colombo or Garrett or talking to Tony Romo.
He's going
to
score, Jim!
What are the we could use that. What are the expectations that the Giants are going to be anyway this year? I mean, it's not like anyone is sitting here saying they're going to be a 10-win team. So I don't know where this idea that there's a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones stems from.
I don't think there's pressure on Daniel Jones. Well, there shouldn't be pressure on Daniel Jones. I mean, especially under these circumstances. But I think where there's a bit of a gray area is the fact that, I mean, it seems like there is pressure on Dave Gettleman.
I would agree with that.
That they need to win. Oh, but how does that, it doesn't go hand in hand? I mean, if you're saying that they're not going to, you know, there's really not that much pressure to win a certain amount of games, well, that flies in the face of there's pressure on Dave Gettleman. So how are you going to judge Dave Gettleman if it's not by wins?
Well, I think it is going to be by wins in some capacity. I think that by saying record is going to matter and they're going to have to be a lot better, I think you backed yourself into a corner if you're John Mara by putting pressure on Dave Gettleman.
Well, I mean, John Mara is the one that decided that he was going to stand up after the season and say that the general manager had to improve his batting average. Nobody made him do that. And everybody recognizes that there was going to be an adjustment in the organization because you were going to hire a new head coach. I think that the reality is that they would like to have a good season, a stepping stone season, but if it's not enough to convince ownership, and when we're talking about convince ownership, I think it's more Steve Tisch than John Mara, that Dave Gettleman should be the general manager in 2021, then that probably means that Dave Gettleman is going to be on the way out of the door and you're trying to find a new GM. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that puts the pressure on Joe Judge and Daniel Jones. I think that's a Dave Gettleman problem. That's not a Joe Judge, Daniel Jones problem.
I agree. And how I think there's a lot of pressure on Gettleman.
Dave, how funny would it have been if Dave Gettleman now with his new analytics department, which is just one big analytics guy or a couple analytics fellas, went bad guy, his comeback was, well, with all due respect, Mr. Mara, with all these analytics, batting average really doesn't matter anymore.
It's really on base, yeah.
And you know what doesn't matter? Your opinion on what we should do because you're fired. That's how he would respond. How he would respond.
Let's go to Eric in Queens. Eric, you're next up on 98.7, buddy.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
Okay.
First off, I didn't know Blake Snell sounded like Draymond Green. That's what it sounded like to me. But, I mean, I don't want to hear about him risking his life. First off, is he willing to risk his life for full pay, or is it it's just because it's half pay all of a sudden, you know, he doesn't want to do it? He's just all over the place, and I mean, I'm risking my life in Queens ever since I started working every day. You know, I took a pay cut, but still gotta feed my kids, still gotta, you know, pay the bills. So, as all the other callers are calling in, we don't want to hear it from these players. You know, just figure it out and play. You know.
Well, Eric, I think Blake Snell brought it up just because he thinks it would be a tough decision if you were getting full pay to take on the kind of risk that the owners are asking the players to take on. But now you talk about not one but two reductions in pay, and it's just something that makes it a lot tougher call. Now, listen, I'm not gonna belittle the fact that there are a lot of people that are out here putting their lives on the line in order to make sure that the rest of us stay safe and that we get to the other side of this pandemic. All I'm simply saying is it comes down to an individual choice, and you can't assign what you would do in a given situation to what those guys are doing.
That's a fair point, you know, and a lot of them can afford to do it, you know. Unlike a lot of us, you know, we can't afford to do that. We got to come out here. We still got to work. But, I mean, that's his prerogative. You're right about that. And, I mean, just don't play. That's what I feel about it. But, all right, thank you.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, but listen, I get it. I can understand why people would feel away, man. These guys are going to make, even with the pay reduction, they're going to make a lot of money if they decide that they go out there and play relative to the rest of the country. Yes. Like, it's a lot of money.
He'll make over $1 million for 4 to 6 months of work.
But you got to put things into the proper context, Dave. You got to think about, okay, what he's doing for his profession and the amount of risk that's associated with that. And then throw on top of that the fact that you're talking about him jeopardizing his not only short-term health, but his long-term health with getting infected with this virus. See, that's the part of it that's hard to understand in terms of the athlete's mindset. Like, this is not something that they typically have to deal with. They don't have to worry about, you know, whether or not their lives are on the line. That's not something that they're used to. So, I mean, when you start to factor that in, you could understand why a lot of guys would be hesitant, especially when you start talking about cutting their salary.
Let's continue along. Let's go to Richie in New York. Richie, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
We're okay.
Okay, I'm an essential worker. I'm in New York City, Manhattan, Queens, everywhere. And I'm a plumber for the city. We maintain the sewage, water for everybody out here. For the essential workers, the nurses, the doctors, for you, for everybody, to make sure that you're safe. Now, my day, I'm working 12 hours, 6 days a week, coming home covered in sewage, going through sterilization processes, seeing coworkers pass away, seeing a grim sight. It's like a war zone out here. And we don't do it for the pay, because we have sick time. We have time we could take off. But we show up to make sure that everybody is safe, because we are men. We signed up for this. And we make sure everybody's safe. We don't cower behind money. We don't sit here and play these games these gentlemen are playing. It's a disgrace. I go home. You know what conversations I have? I have a conversation with my fiance asking if her and my daughter could move in with my parents until this passes, because I'm putting them at risk to see if that makes them feel safe. Because I got to come home, and when my daughter, the highlight of my life, runs down the driveway and gives me a hug after work, I have to tell her, don't touch me, don't touch me. Let me go in, let me scrub. And she's crying to me because she missed me all day. And she's like, why are you doing this? Because I said, this is what you do to make sure that human beings are safe, because it's humanity. It's being a man. And then to hear somebody who's making millions turn around and tell us, oh, I got to get mine. I'll tell you this much. He will get his, because karma does come back. And he's not going to get a dime from my paycheck. And I love sports. But if this continues with every sport, this conversation, I will tell you this much. I'm done with it. I'm done with sports. And I hope every person that shows up to work for the city, that listens to the radio, then hears that we possibly may be getting laid off because of financial cuts and we still show up, is an absolute disgrace that we hear multimillionaires talking about this while we're providing with their sitting home, and they turn around and tell us, oh, we got to take a little bit of a pay cut or a certain pay cut. But if it's a safety issue, I understand. To each their own. But you know what?
Let me ask you, can I ask you a quick question? Can I ask you,
sure, no problem. Maybe you don't have to answer it
if you don't want to. Just, I mean, sure. Now, if you were given the option, right, like if you were given the option now where you didn't have to work, and then, you know, when this thing does, you know, if it's a vaccine.
So I have plenty of time I could take off and stay home and be safe.
Okay.
I have plenty of time saved.
All right, no, that's a fair answer to the question. I just, what you're doing is I mean, and thank you for doing it, but I mean, you're talking about something that, you know, the state needs, the country needs, the people, I mean, everyone that is doing their job. It's essential. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, as much as we want to see it, sports right now isn't saving lives. It's not essential.
Yes, and I understand that. But to turn around to contradict by saying, I'm going to get mine because it's a money issue, that's a spit in my face.
Well, I think, Richie, and I'm going to let you finish talking because I want to hear from you. I think what he's saying is you're asking us to take on a greater risk at less pay. Now, I get it. These guys make a lot more money than you do. But let's say, for instance, your employer went to you and said, yeah, we want you to continue to work, but we're going to ask you to pay to work for less money. I think that's the part. That's the part of it that seems like it's a little disrespectful from the player's standpoint. Again, all of this stuff is relative when we're talking about the conversation with money. It's all relative. Yeah. What might be a lot of money for one person is not a lot of money for another one. So I guess that would be my question to you, is if your boss asks you to take a lot less money, is that something that you would be willing to do knowing that you're taking on more risk?
Okay. The best response I could give you, Chris, is we show up every single day as essential employees in the most disgusting, horrific area, and they turn around as essential employees for the city, and they're on the news talking about budgets and potential layoffs for the people of us, these nurses, these doctors, that they're going to be laid off possible, and we still show up every day, that we're going to lose our jobs on top of that, and we still show up because we are human beings. We're going to do everything we can.
Yeah, but see,
Richie, I got what you're saying, but here's my point. And listen, every single one of us thinks that you guys don't get paid enough based on what you have to do to keep our city going. We appreciate you. Like, we really do. But I guess the question would be, if you could leverage the things that you're doing now, the sacrifices that you're making now to make things better for you and for the other people that work in your profession and the other people that are essential workers now, if you could leverage that against your employers, would you do that? Because all of this comes down to making sure that the players have the best conditions possible for a return to sport. All of this comes down to making sure that their interests are not just protected now, but protected in the future. I think that's the conversation that's going on between the union and the owners.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just want to make sure I get my point across. I apologize. No, what I say is they're showing up to the best facilities, the best tests, the best medical doctors.
Yeah, but Richie,
I'm sorry, can I just finish this thing, please, gentlemen?
Okay, yep.
We don't have a single thing of protection. We couldn't even get tests at one point. And I understand that's not your fault, their fault, whatever. But we were still showing up and still showing up to make sure that everybody is safe under those conditions. These gentlemen, in the middle of the crisis, is leveraging. After the crisis is one thing. But during a crisis,
well, Richie,
step up.
Richie, but this started because the owners are trying to gain the leverage.
Yes, that's exactly it.
That's how this whole thing started.
Yes.
And I think the other thing too is, you know, again, I mean, talking about, you know, with what you do in layoffs and pay cuts and everything else. I mean, if I was in, you know, Richie's shoes, and you know, I was putting all this time and taking on this risk and having these conversations with my fiance and my daughter. I mean, if I was given the option to not do it, of course I would take the option not to do it. But I mean, I'm sure part of the reality too is that if you do make that decision and you do start, you know, taking days off and everything else, that maybe you end up being, you know, one of the first people that does get laid off.
I'm sure you would be. Richie, okay. We got to run. We appreciate everything you do and we appreciate the phone call. We hope to hear from you again soon. Guys,
that's not,
Buster only. We got to break.
Okay, I know we got a break, but that's not the mindset of these professional athletes.
I understand.
And the other harsh reality to that is this, Rick. If Richie doesn't go to work, then you're talking about people potentially losing their lives. We're not talking about people losing their lives if they don't play baseball this year.
Well, you know what it's like? We can take the break when we take the break, because Buster's will have him on as, for the rest of the show, he can co-host. It's like, for example, why I think owners in the NFL have a harder time wrapping their minds around guaranteed contracts. Because of the risk of injury. Like, if I would ask you right now, of the four major sports, right, which sport is most likely to play through injury of the four major sports?
The sport that doesn't have guaranteed contracts.
Yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, because you're replaceable.
Yes.
You could lose your job.
Yes.
Right?
So, we don't have as much leverage.
Exactly right. And the baseball players now feel like they have some leverage here, and they're going to exert it.
All right, we'll get back to this later because I think it's an interesting debate, and I think that in the court of public opinion, it's going to be difficult for the players to win it. But I thought the call was good, and I thought that the conversation was good as well. in these trying times. Important to remember, we pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send us an email, and it's easy. Just send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. One of our favorites, Buster Olney, covers Major League Baseball so well for us at ESPN. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing okay, guys. How are you?
We're hanging in there the best that we possibly can be. So I'm sure you heard it, Blake Snell on Twitch with some interesting comments. A lot of people turned off by them. A lot of people kind of defending what he said. What's your take on what Blake Snell had to say?
First off, it's a reminder of something I've been talking about for a few years, that being in the middle of any kind of a labor situation in a professional sports league with since the advent of social media makes it so much more difficult because everyone has their own platform, and it's not like it was back in the mid-90s when individual players were saying things in players' meetings and other veteran players would tell them to shut up and sit down. Everyone has things to say, and as I listened to it, I just was shaking my head. I feel like this week, the last few days, what we've gotten from the Player Association and also on ownership side, with they're leaking to reporters the proposal they had for the players, it's just a reminder. These people are insane. Like, did they have any self-awareness about what's going on in this country? Because to talk about money out loud and to talk about you don't want to give up. No one wants to hear it. It is the worst possible time to be talking out loud about salary cap and, salary that you may have lost and taxes, when 30 million people have lost their jobs and there are people lined up in lines to get food and people are wondering how they're going to pay the mortgage. It's insane. And I keep waiting for leaders to emerge.
Yeah, but Buster, I mean, I don't know what the feeling around Major League Baseball is, but on this show, I mean, the owners coming out with a 50-50 revenue split, that felt calculated to me. That felt a little bit dirty.
Well, the leak of it, for sure. There's no question, and that's why I feel like that what's happened so far is that both sides are kind of, playing to the usual form of negotiations where they sit in their trenches and they lob, shells at each other, verbal shells at each other. And in this case, and in the current situation, I really think if, in fact, they all want the sport to get back together, they're going to have to collaborate. And there's got to be a sense of imagination. There's got to be a sense of fairness. And there can't be a goal of, let's win this time. It has to be, how can we move forward and have the game survive? Because I tell you what, as they continue to feed in to the perception that this is an argument between billionaires and millionaires, and you guys know better than I do, that it's more complicated than that. They are not only, I think, does it hurt the players for that conversation to go on, but I think it really does serious damage to the product.
So, Buster, with that being said, where exactly are we in terms of where the players and the owners are at in trying to get back to playing games? I mean, what's the biggest hurdle to clear? Is it the logistics part of it, or is it the money?
Well, in the end, it's the effort to get the player to keep the players healthy, which will always be a threat to derail their effort to get back. Because they can, let's say that they agreed on the money part of it and they agreed on the other details. And then as a general manager pointed out to me, you get a rash of positive tests in some clubhouse, the whole thing could fall apart in, 24 hours the way that it did with the Utah Jazz and the NBA. And that would be, devastating in its own right. Early on, that their conversations have been about the health issues. They typically, the way the negotiations between baseball and the Players Association go is they work through the easier stuff first, they try to build some momentum, and then they save the sticky stuff for last. There's no question. The financial stuff is a big deal. And they're also going to have to deal with the question of how do they handle the players who say, I don't want to participate, because I don't think there's any doubt there are going to be a group of those. Under the current CBA rules, if a guy like Blake Snell were to say, I don't want to play, and a major league season actually took place, his contract could be voided. under the old CBA. There clearly would have to be more latitude, more understanding, you know, for players with existing health, underlying health conditions, players who have family considerations. There's just so many details to work through. I do think the money is going to be the biggest sticking point.
Buster Olney with us here, 98.7 ESPN. A Baseball Tonight podcast drops this evening with Charles Barkley, so we'll certainly be on the lookout for that. That'll be a must-listen to. He's very, very entertaining. Buster, yeah, they have to play. And I'm saying if they can figure out a way to make it work, that they can figure out a way where to play and 80 games and all that, and you don't play because money gets in the way, how in the world does this game ever rebound? And we just had a caller that called that's doing, you know, frontline kind of work, and you have all these people that are, as you said, you know, desperate for money and taking pay cuts. If you get a sport of millionaire and billionaire people that do not wind up playing because of the financial implications.
Oh my gosh.
How do you go forward if you're baseball?
It's going to be like a patriotic thing, as one person mentioned that to me. If in fact they have an opportunity and they to play and they don't play because they couldn't figure out the financial side of it, it's going to be like patriotic to boycott baseball. I mean, there is not going to be any sympathy for that. You start with this. I mean, here we are on Monday, and the owners, you know, they have the conference call. The owners' proposal is leaked out and then it's forwarded to the players. And in the back of your mind, like, where have they all been for the last 2 months? Like, why are they not working through these financial issues constantly? And by the way, especially behind closed doors. Because, you know, when Tony Clark put out a statement the other day and mentioned salary cap, and Scott Boras had his things to say, and Blake Snell says something like that, I don't know how it helps any of them, anybody, to talk about it out loud. I think it would do enormous damage to the sport moving forward. I had someone on the player side yesterday who mentioned to me that, you know, there's a feeling that on the player side that they might actually have some leverage because there are teams that are in dire financial situation, not taking in revenue. And because the owners in recent years have gotten and made so much money, the feeling is we can take some ground back. And my response to him was, I get it, but do you understand how risky that could be to the golden goose that you all work with? That if they play out this game of chicken and it doesn't come back and people, fans, know that because it was a fight over money, no matter who you agree with, it would be devastating.
Buster Olney joins us here on the show. Buster, you know, one of the things that we encountered when, you know, I was on the negotiating committee in the NHL with the CBA is, you know, there was clearly a lack of trust, but more importantly, we never really knew exactly how much each team was making. Like, they really wouldn't let us dive into their books. How much of that goes into, you know, trying to sort this out if you're Tony Clark, and what, you know, what exactly is the 50% of the actual revenue? Like, what is that revenue?
Exactly. And I think you absolutely outlined the current situation and the lack of trust. Look, my own opinion is that the players' leadership did a terrible job in the 2016 CBA negotiations, and they got crushed. And the owners, not only did they win, but they did a victory lap in terms of the money that they took in. To me, if there's any hope of the two sides working something out, it needs to be, okay, total transparency. Here's where our books are. Here's what your teams are making. Bring in your independent auditors. Go over it. Here's the pie that we're looking at. Here are the potential losses. There has to be 100% transparency. And, you know, I've wondered from the player side, if you want to exploit the leverage that you potentially have, because there are teams hurting so bad financially, maybe the way you use that is to dive into the negotiations for the next CBA, because the current CBA expires in December 2021. Maybe you wrap this all into one. Look, we have issues about service time. We have issues about free agency. You guys are hurting now. How about we do this, this, and this? But that stuff can't happen until they get in the same room and start talking. And I think we've learned this week that there hasn't been a lot of that going on, and they both need it.
Well, Buster, from listening to you, it sounds like that money is going to be the biggest part of this in terms of getting all the things worked out. in trying to start a regular season. I guess we spend so much time focusing on the players and how much money is in it for them. But I got to ask you this question about the owners and specifically about the teams and the operating income and all of those different things. We recognize that teams are going to lose all the gate revenue for this coming season because we don't anticipate fans being in stadiums. But how real is the risk of teams operating in the negative for a truncated regular season if, in fact, we are able to play games?
It's definitely going to be a problem because there are teams. Look, there are teams that are very well-heeled. You know, the Washington Nationals have very wealthy ownership. The Dodgers, the Yankees are in good shape. And on the other hand, you have the teams that are more, in, you know, more like the local neighborhood hardware store mom-and-pa place, like the Mets. You've got the small market teams like the Indians that are much more dependent on that kind of revenue. Guys, after the draft takes place, the five-round draft, there is an anticipation of massive layoffs in the industry. You know, to the point that people aren't going to come back. And I have been, just based on my conversations with people in the game, I've been concerned about not only the layoffs, but sort of the lack of humanity that's been demonstrated in some franchises, not all of them. Like Chris Illich, Tigers owner, seems like he's done a good job. The Pittsburgh Pirates recently, I don't know if you guys saw this news, they eliminated their 401k contributions to their employees for a couple of months. And I asked people with other teams, how much would that have saved the Pirates as an organization? And I heard back something in the range of per month, $20,000 to $25,000. Okay? Some of the employees they're going to get, that are going to be let go, are making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. There are definitely going to be teams that are going to be absolutely attached to the bottom line, and they are going to cut to the bone. You feel like there should be more flexibility in that, but there are teams that are going to adhere to what they feel like and make their adjustments according to what they believe their losses are going to be this year.
Buster, only with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Good stuff as always. And I guess the question for me is, we hear June 10th-ish, spring training 2.0. We hear July 4th-ish, the start of the season. Is that realistic? I mean, right now, as we sit around May 14th, do you think that those are attainable dates and that we do start baseball in early July?
I think that it's a little aggressive if, in fact, they can get a deal done. I'm more skeptical now that they're actually going to be able to get a deal done than I was at the beginning of the week. But I have had some moderates on both sides tell me that in the end, the fact that you know, this is the way they all make their money, you know, for the players, for the owners, that eventually they'll work their way through this and get it done. The spring training would probably take, because the pitchers a lot, you know, most of them have ramped down completely. They would need another 3 to 4 weeks to restart and get going. So around July 4th weekend, mid July is probably the, you know, the best case scenario that you could look for. And I, you know, an 82 game season, I think, would be representative, and it would be the, you know, making the best of a bad situation.
Hey, Buster, and I don't know if you can even answer this question or not, but I know last time, you know, we heard, as far as the plan was concerned, you know, teams wanted to have games in their own stadiums. But if you're going to make the argument that 40% of your revenue is gate, doesn't it make more sense to have these games in states that are further along in this process as far as them opening up and having the possibility of having fans in seats?
I think that they will take what they can get as long as with the idea that, okay, what's the best possible chance to keep players and staff healthy? And I think that would be the priority. If they thought they were taking on extra risk by having fans in the stands, I got to believe that the players, that would be a line that they would draw in the sand. Look, you know, one of the great complications among many in this whole thing is the shifting sand underneath them in terms of trying to figure out where to play, right? Where you could say, yeah, you know, the Yankees and Mets are going to play their home games, but what happens if a hotspot pops up and Mayor, Governor Cuomo steps in and says, you know, all these events are shut down? If the city of New York shuts it down, then they would have to find some other place to play. That is going to be the shifting context, I think, we're going to see for the sport whenever it does come back.
Buster, I know this question is trivial in comparison to what we're talking about, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on the universal DH and playoff expansion. Do you think those are things that could potentially grow the game?
I believe, and I remember when the first plan of expansion playoffs came out I think it was in February, and there were players like Trevor Bauer very critical of it. I loved it, and I know from talking with folks who worked at small market teams and even some players on small market teams, they loved it too. That could certainly generate revenue. I think that the use of the universal DH is, we should think of it kind of like we do with the change in rules to catcher collisions and plays at second base. That is part of the growing effort among front offices, which are, you know, rooted in analytics, to protect pitchers. They feel like, you know, we pay these guys a lot of money to pitch. Their focus is on pitching. Their training is around pitching. And yet, time and again, we see pitchers get injured either hitting or running the bases. The best local example being Chenming Wong, who basically had his career with the Yankees derailed with a foot injury running the bases. It's a short-term solution for 20 if they come back to keep pitchers healthy. But I don't think there's any question it's a part of baseball's future whenever they agree to the next CBA.
All right, Buster, I'm fresh out of questions, but I know Rick always likes to get the last one in there. So, Rick, do you have a final, or should we let Buster go?
No, here's the final question. And Buster, the reason why I asked you that initial question as far as, you know, the gate and everything else, it was less about, you know, maybe having fans in seats, but as far as keeping, you know, players as healthy as possible,
yep.
It just seems, I mean, if all of a sudden now you're talking about playing in your own stadiums and leaving that up to chance, and on top of that, you're going to have guys jumping on planes and having to travel up and down the East Coast or wherever they're at, I mean, as a player, my own personal feeling would be it would be safer for me to be in one general, like just be in Florida and have it, you know, that way I'm just jumping on buses and less travel as opposed to now kind of, I mean, it's shorter travel, but there still is, I mean, you're bringing a lot more people into the equation doing it that way.
Exactly. I think, you know, I was talking with a family member about that. At the beginning, I said, think of it like a math equation. The fewer people that you're exposed to, the less your chances are. And I do think that mentality will win out. You know, we've heard about the plan to, you know, to play in empty ballparks. We're seeing it work in South Korea. But I've had players tell me they can't stand it when we compare what's going on in South Korea to what's going on here. Because over there, I think last week they were averaging something in a range of like 2 to 10 new coronavirus cases for a country of 52 million daily. And here, it's between 20,000 and 30,000 new cases per day, according to Johns Hopkins. So the context is very different.
All right. Well, Buster, listen, we really appreciate you as always. You're certainly a good friend to the show. We'll take a listen tonight to the Baseball Tonight podcast with Charles Barkley, which is going to be a must listen. And hopefully next time we talk to you, we have some more, defined details of when we're going to start Major League Baseball season.
Boy, we all hope that. Absolutely. Stay safe, guys.
All right. You as well. That, of course, is Buster Olney, who was hot in his, just disdain for what Blake Snell is doing. And
it's tone deaf, but it's tone deaf, man.
It is.
The owners did that. I mean, there was a reason why they leaked that proposal, knowing they would get the response from Tony Clark and the Players Association, and knowing that the players will never win this fight. When they start talking about money, the players will always lose in the court of public opinion, always.
Yep.
Listening to Buster talk, it became clear to me that the owners of these teams aren't going to take the L. They're not. They're going to pass on whatever losses that they're faced with to the players and to the rest of their employees. They are not going to go into their own pockets in order to sustain these franchises or to have a season.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.